I'm Matthew Woods, host of Leading Out of the Woods, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us for another wonderful episode of My EdTech Life. Thank you so much for joining us on this beautiful day. Hopefully, wherever in the world you're joining us from or listening to us, I hope you've had an amazing day so far. Thank you all for all your continued support. We really appreciate all the likes, the shares, the follows. Thank you so much for following us on social media. And again, if you haven't followed us on YouTube, please, we ask that you hop over to YouTube. As you know, our mission for this year is to get to 1,000 subscribers. So if you haven't subscribed yet, please make sure you do so. But thank you to everybody on LinkedIn, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. We appreciate all the likes, the shares, and the follows. And thank you to our wonderful sponsors. We've got Lucid for Education. We've got EduAid. We've got Goose Chase, Content Clips. Thank you so much for your continued support. And today I'm really excited for a great show. We're going to be talking about just technology overall. As you know, post-pandemic, we have received funds in many of our school districts. And if you're a leader in those school districts or an instructional coach or just a teacher, I should say, please understand that we know that the tech has helped us out. But now as the years go by, we see that the technology might be just kind of lacking a little bit, and we're trying to figure out ways that we can go ahead and improve on those things. So today I am delighted to welcome Mr. Eric Stromquist from CTL to the show. Mr. Stromquist, or may I call you Eric?
Absolutely. Call me Eric.
Eric, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm super excited to be here, super excited to be involved in your show, and I'll definitely be a subscriber after this.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being here. And I know Michelle contacted me and we spoke, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. And this is a wonderful opportunity because in my current role, I do get to see some of those pain points and just some of those things that are happening right now as far as the funding and how that may affect the impact on learning and also on instruction. So I'm just so thankful that you're here today to share not only what you're doing through CTL, but share your expertise and what it is that you're seeing. So I'm really excited to learn about the CTL story. So Eric, if you can go ahead and give us a little bit of an introduction as far as kind of your journey within this space, and then of course, how CTL started and that backstory. That way our audience members can know a little bit more about not only you, but also about CTL as well.
Sure. I mean, I've been with the organization for a while, so the stories kind of weave together along the way. But my background is I've been with the organization for, you know, multiple decades now. And, you know, I'll tell the CTL story. My journey really started off in finance, and I have a degree in accounting and finance and decision science, which is statistics. And, you know, going to school in the late 80s and 90s, I found a love for computing, particularly the spreadsheets back then. And I would say that I was probably leading in that, having one of the only ones with a personal computer and doing all those things that automated tasks. So I fell in love with it early on, just on what it could do. Some of the first technology book I read was about Sun Microsystems and, Bill Joy and Scott McNeely and all those guys, how they started that, and of course, the Apple story, and all the kind of superstars of tech were happening as I was going through my university, including Bill Gates and the rise of Microsoft. So when I eventually graduated, I was going to go into public accounting, and somehow I met this guy who was running a computer company at the time. His name was David Kim. And then, you know, really I got the chance to be in the industry, which I didn't expect. Not in addition to being a tech enthusiast, you know, I spend my time, I have two young twins, so very active in that space. So I'm seeing how they are interacting with technology in their schools. So that's really helpful. But in my spare time, I'm really into running and fitness, although I need to do a lot more work in that area. But also along the way, I got involved in the music business too, a little bit. I learned how to write and record and perform songs, but also license the music. And this is going back to the technology days of MySpace and Spotify and digitizing and monetize all those platforms, which really, I want to say, all weave together with the talk we're having today, because innovation and technology and business models are really kind of the innovation that CTL brings to the table. So they're one and the same. Another thing too about, you know, we're very international based and we have a very global view of a lot of the things we do, not just the United States. So that's kind of become part of my character, I suppose, on thinking about the global nature of our business and certainly how these economies work together. The, you know, what's going on with the United States and China and Taiwan and all these inner geopolitical issues that affect our industry too. So, you know, that's me in a nutshell, essentially tech enthusiast, but also an innovator, I think, but can also put on my suit and grind financial statements if I have to.
There you go. And that's excellent. That's very well-rounded. And definitely a lot of what you mentioned definitely ties into the work that you're currently doing right now. And you said, you know, you've been in the business for a couple of years now, and, you know, CTL is definitely growing. And I, you know, I know that for sure you're one of the largest Chromebook manufacturers, you know, also specializing in the education space or EDU space, like I like to call it. So tell us a little bit about that, you know, for our audience members. Like I mentioned, there are other, you know, maybe sellers or resellers that are out there, but you are actually manufacturing these devices, and you're also, you know, a very working, obviously, as an OEM, working directly with customers and so on. So tell us a little bit about that as far as, you know, the difference for us. And I mean, for us, as far as like myself in my role and maybe CTOs, is there a reason why maybe some CTOs choose to go maybe with a third party vendor instead of working directly with, you know, maybe someone like CTL who actually manufactures? Is there a particular reason why?
Well, I think that's a complicated question. I mean, there's multiple channels of distribution that customers could choose from. I mean, they can choose to do business with omni-channel vendors like CTL or Dell. We're certainly closer to the product and closer to the solution. And then there's the historical way of doing business, which, let's take like an HP Lenovo model that is very OEM based, which Lenovo and Dell and HP are OEMs. And then they sell to a distributor, and the distributor sells to the reseller, and the reseller sells to the end customer. So you might say that that's an antiquated business model in many cases. Probably the more successful PC guys of the, you know, the last 20, 30 years have been Dell and Gateway to some degree, although they got sidetracked with other things. But take Dell, for example. They've always been direct to the customer, right? And that allows them to have a lot more control of the experience, but also control of service, control over the things that customers want. If you buy from reseller who buys from a distributor who buys from a manufacturer, they might be really good, but they're very disconnected with the market. They might be behind on what the technology is, but nevertheless, their ability to solve problems diminishes because they're just further away from the solution. And that's not to say a lot of these guys aren't great. I mean, you're talking about major powerhouses like CDW and Insight and other ones that are really good at what they do. But in many cases, if you're buying from, you know, a reseller down the street, they're many layers away from the people that designed it and the intention of the product. So I think it might not be in the best interest of the customer at that stage, but it's hard to say.
Yeah.
You know, resellers bring some things to the table, like services and local touch and things like that. But certainly at CTL, who's a omni-channel supplier, we think about those same things from an OEM point of view on how we can build capabilities that we think customers want. And we think that because we talk to them and they tell us. So we can provide the solution all the way up the chain quickly, whereas a lot of people cannot do that.
Mm-hmm. No, and you know, one thing that you mentioned that I absolutely like is as far as being an OEM, which for all our audience members, OEM, if you're maybe you've listened to that, maybe you're part of, you know, the technology department and so on, talking about original equipment manufacturer. So I think that that is something that is very important that I absolutely love that you mentioned is how you are not that many layers away from servicing the customer. And that point of contact to me is so important. And so I understand, like you're saying, you can see things in different ways. And of course, you know, there's always an upside and a downside to certain things. But to me, I kind of liken it to this, and I'm going to put myself out there and saying this, but many times, you know, as people move within an organization, you become a little far removed from the way things used to be in the classroom. And then there are layers that you have to go through. And then sometimes decisions are based on, you know, maybe past experiences and things that, you know, maybe have changed significantly. So sometimes, you know, when those solutions are brought up, they're like, wait a minute, like, we're not quite there anymore yet. But here you're mentioning like just that layer of service, it, just being one step away. I think that's something that is definitely beneficial. And I think, you know, for what you're currently doing in CTL in providing the Chromebooks and working in the education space, I think that's something that's very important because I know in our experience, buying from third parties, sometimes it's just the wait time. Sometimes it's like, hey, you know, they haven't been shipped yet, or this shipment got stuck here because of certain chips and things of that sort. So it's like too many layers. And my biggest concern is the following, is the return on instruction. You know, the students are missing out, or the teachers are missing out on that instruction time because we can't help them. So I wanted to ask you, as far as, you know, the service is concerned, you being an OEM, an original equipment manufacturer, and being kind of just that one layer away, you know, what is it that, you know, kind of sets you apart as far as that service? Can you, you know, go a little bit more into detail? So let's say I'm a CTO, I order from you something, you know, maybe there's some repairs or anything kind of like that. What is it that CTL can offer me to make sure that my students are still learning, that my teachers are still going, you know, with their devices?
Sure. I mean, well, let me level set the industry how it works. So there's OEMs, which are original equipment manufacturer, like you pointed out. Essentially, we're the brands, right? We're the responsible party that designs and services and supports these brands. And then one layer up from us is what's called the ODM. And they're the ones actually working with us to assemble these. And there's very few in the world. And there's very few top ones. Most of them are based in Taiwan. And we're talking about brands you've never heard before, like Quanta Computer, Compal, Inventec, Pegatron, names you probably, they don't run off the tip of your tongue. But they're producing, between those four guys, probably they're producing 99% of the Chromebooks in the world. In addition to Quanta builds MacBook Pros and whatever. So they are the heartbeat of the ecosystem, and they're very difficult to get access to, but they're very good. I mean, they have their share of problems too, but they're the ones running the factories around the world and working with brands like CTL. So, but anyway, to get to your question, I think that because we're an omni-channel OEM and we're working directly with ODMs, we have insight into what goes into our product because we choose it. We design it, right? They build it for us, but it's our product. So we know the strengths and we know what really works. But at the same time, you know, when problems occur, we typically know those too. So, you know, if someone says to CTL, like, hey, I've seen this issue on this X, sometimes it's new to us, right? It could be like, oh, we've never seen that before. But we take that information and we go back and say, let's test on this. Is this an isolated incident? Is this something we need to investigate more? You know, and we'll do that work to make sure that our solution is the right for the customer. And then we can change it. Right. So let's say, years ago we had a situation where, like during the COVID era, like kids were really tough on devices that year, but like our battery was like bouncing around and like tugging on the keyboard. So it caused some issues. So, you know, we went back and investigated, and sure enough, I mean, in certain environments, the battery could tug on the keyboard or cause some damage. So what did we do? We changed the connection to the keyboard, and we were able to fix that and deploy, you know, services to our customer to address it. And when they called and say, hey, we're having this keyboard issue, we're like, yeah, we've seen it. Here's the fix. Now let's say if we're a reseller of a reseller and that comes up. Hey, Eric, I bought all these things from you 2 years ago. Now I'm a reseller. I have no idea. I'm going to call the distributor who's going to maybe call manufacturer guys to find out, you know, you just don't get access to that information. So we're very close to the customer. We think that's a super strength of CTL that also allows us to take their feedback, build better products. I think if you look back at CTL's history, we were one of the first ones to bring a rugged Chromebook to the market in 2014. We collaborated with Intel and some others and brought the first one that had ruggedization to it and water resistance. That was us. So, I mean, that was based on market feedback and knowing the customers, right? And the rest of the industry was oblivious to those things. They were just doing it like they'd always done it. So we think we're an agent for change. We have our restrictions and our limitations too, but we certainly fight hard for change to make a better product at CTL.
Yes. And, you know, I truly do believe that. And what you're saying, just the model itself, the fact that you're getting that feedback and using it, getting that customer, you know, review, customer, you know, service, that point of contact, because you're not layers away, really helps you take that feedback, you know, back to the manufacturers. And one thing that I love that you said is based on that feedback, it's like, okay, we'll improve the product. So now you're working with school districts. And can I ask real quick, just before I continue, how many school districts do you service here, you know, or do you service worldwide as well?
Yeah, we service worldwide. I think, you know, the dominant geo for our education devices is the United States and then Southern Europe. You know, thousands and thousands of districts. I think there's over 15,000 in the country. We've touched a lot of them. Can't say all. We still have a relatively small market share compared to our peers. We think that's an advantage to CTL because, you know, that allows us to maintain a lot of control. I mean, we continue to grow and a target is to grow our share, but we don't mind being small. We think that's an advantage to us compared to Lenovo, who's, you know, doing a lot of different products, including education. Or HP, which is a massive company. And so a lot of times they care, but not that much. They really care about their enterprise and corporate business. CTL does have other lines of business in the enterprise space. Specifically, we build Google equipment for the conference room with Logitech and other OEMs. And that's a large business for CTL. We touch a lot of countries there, more than 50 for that business. So, you know, we are diverse, but we're heavy focused on education.
That's great. And you know, so that's what I wanted to add, like you mentioned, is to the fact that how easy it is for you to support. And I know you're in multiple countries, like you said, and multiple districts, but the fact that you are still big and, you know, within the environment, but still small enough to get that feedback and say like, okay, guys, this is what we're seeing. And maybe this is what the teachers are asking for. Or you know what? As platforms change, resolutions change, you know, what can we do better to provide, you know, a great, you know, piece of hardware for our students to be able to effectively have a great learning experience, you know, because one of the things that I mentioned, and we're going to get into this, is just that the funding and sustainability aspect of it, where it seems like now some of that funding, it has gone down or is pretty much on its way out. And now how are we going to sustain these devices and making sure that our students have it on hand? But I love that customer service aspect of it in that that you offer, because like you mentioned, sometimes we can be stuck in doing things a certain way because that's the way we've always done it. But sometimes, you know, it's okay to kind of step outside the box and see what's going to work best. And, you know, oftentimes I think it's just an optics just saying, well, this company is this much bigger, but we haven't had the best experience with them, where maybe this company is a little bit smaller, but man, that attention, and we know what we're getting, and we know that there isn't going to be a disruption in education within our campuses or within our teachers. I think that's very powerful. So
I'll give you an example of one thing years ago. It was a problem that we discovered. What was happening is our SSD, our eMMC on the board was like, Google did an update and it was like killing drives, like quite a pretty big extent. I don't remember the percentage, but noticeable. We were kind of freaking out about it because like we didn't understand it. We didn't know how to fix. So we ran into some of our friends at Google and they have a database. They can see what's going on, by the way. But anyway, they looked it up. Yeah, hey, this is really happening. I'm like, yeah, of course it is. So they assigned an engineer. The engineer, you know, kind of went heads down for about a month and wrote some update for Chrome OS that would basically go in there and recover the drive. And you couldn't do it over there. It was something you had to manually do. Okay. So we got the fix. Took a while, but our customers were happy because we could recover their motherboards. Well, it turns out Lenovo was using that same motherboard, same situation, and their machines were dropping left and right out in the field. Hopefully Lenovo's not watching this. But anyway, we had the fix for the Lenovo fix too. So when we ran into the problems of Lenovo's device, machines, we're like, hey, we see you have a lot of Lenovos. If you run into this problem, here's the fix for it. We found the fix and we can fix their machine too. We probably fixed tens of thousands of Lenovo's for customers because CTL got the fix first. We cared enough about to go to the bat for the customer. Obviously Google helped us a lot and we got it done, but we extended that to other brands too. And we took care of a lot of customers that didn't even buy from CTL that had a competing device. So, I mean, those are things that we could do because we're just paying attention to the market a lot closer to, you know, than others. Often I don't have a problem with customers calling me. I get texts from them all the time. We're very accessible. And that's the way we like to work. Yeah. Maybe we get so big that we have a bunch of layers in the company, but that's not the case. We're very accessible and that's the way we like it.
Excellent. Well, that's wonderful. Well, that's a great, you know, kind of backstory and the work that you're doing and obviously sharing with our audience, you know, what it is that you have done and, just the difference between, you know, those third-party distributors and obviously what you're working and doing and the different layers. So I'm glad that you were able to share that. But now what I want to do is I want to move a little bit like we were talking about as far as like funding and sustainability. Yeah. And because this is something that I know you get to see firsthand, kind of like, you know, from an overview, because you work with so many districts. I get to see it just from what's happening in my district and maybe neighboring districts and friends of mine that work, you know, within that same space as, you know, instructional techs or digital coaches and CTOs and so on. But, you know, that we know that the pandemic obviously created this situation where all of a sudden we had to flip the switch and go completely virtual from brick and mortar to virtual and not having enough devices and then having to do device rollouts and so on. But, you know, funding is something that right now this year and going well into next year, at least in my district and neighboring districts, is something that everybody's already talking about and everybody's already trying to tighten up. So can you share some of the challenges that you have seen many schools face, you know, as this funding is slowly trickling away?
Well, let's talk what is contributing to this problem too. I mean, you pointed out the pandemic funding was, you know, off the charts. You know, the industry went, I don't remember all the numbers, but I, you know, generally speaking, the industry went from like 16 to 17 million units a year in education in 2019 to 25 million units in 2020, 25 million units in 2021. And then it corrected to about 18, 19 million units, and it's correcting again. So you have this massive wave of devices that were purchased during those years. Those devices were designed by OEMs like CTL in 2018 and 17, 2 years before that. No one had any prior knowledge or any vision that these things were going to be in these kids' lives, from the camera and the classroom and virtual learning and all that stuff. Intel didn't envision that from the Wi-Fi point of view. So they bought all these devices, they consumed them. They got to one-to-one. They did. We got to almost 100% saturation. That means that every kid has a device and we're hovering around, I think it's starting to drop now. So we achieved one-to-one. Okay. So the challenge of that is like, okay, now that you've achieved one-to-one, how do you maintain it? How do you maintain those numbers? Cause they're massive. And I think that's the beginning of the troubles of the education sector is now they have to maintain the one-to-one. Forget about the sustainable funding model and new devices, but what about all the stuff you have? How do you maintain it when kids, you know, break them at a high rate? And that all depends on the school district and digital citizenship. So if you look at the successful programs, and you're really talking about the state of Maine, you're talking about Nevada Ready 21, the ones that came all the way before the pandemic, they were doing one-to-ones at a pretty large scale. They started with digital citizenship. They started with, district stakeholders, the teachers, everybody who's involved to work together to have a successful outcome. They also talked about what the outcomes were. They talked about how they measure outcomes. So there was a lot of investment from not only the student stakeholders, but the teachers, the districts, et cetera. And all those elements contributed to very successful programs. Well, pandemic comes along. No one put a lot of that planning into place. They had to buy it from just requirement point of view. So what happens? Well, the break rates are really high. Managing those things, the outcomes kind of flew out the window. Districts lost a huge amount of Chromebooks, the broken Chromebooks. So now they're like, oh, how do we manage these things? And here we are, right? We got to one-to-one, forced in some cases, you might say, but now we're having to figure out how to make it work. So it's a very complicated question. I think it first starts with Google recently extended the support by 2 years because they got a lot of grief for sustainability. I think that they got wrongly accused of contributing to e-waste during that period of time. I think, you know, all the suppliers have the same problem related to e-waste, but Google got singled out because they're the dominant market share during that period of time. So, you know, to maintain the life and improve sustainability, it needs to start with, you know, being able to repair your own devices is one way. And we support those things. And we support the right to repair movement. CTL allows customers to repair them. We make parts available. We've been doing this for years and years and years. And that's a movement that I think that can help sustain and, you know, extend the life of the device. So that's one way. We're starting to do new programs too, where we're really getting the circularity of the business. That means that we're offering trade-ins or credits on your old devices to bring them back in. Oftentimes we refurbish those and sell them back into the market, and customers augment their investment by using refurbished to get another year out of their devices and avoid a full replacement cycle. So that's part of it. And then you get into the whole funding model. What is the, you know, if you have these kind of big waves of funds, they come in and then you have the maintenance attached to it. The alternative business models, like we have a rental model, and then you have the leasing models, and then you have some other models that really have predictable funding. The problem with those predictable funding models is you still don't have the service element. You're still on the risk and you're still on the hook about maintaining those devices, which often can be more expensive than the cost of the device. The total cost of ownership is something that everybody needs to start thinking about. And, you know, CTL competes on a worldwide scale. We see some of these ridiculous prices sometimes that people buy at. And we're like, are you thinking about the cost of ownership in like 3 and 4 and 5 years? What does the cost look like when you're talking about a heavy maintenance load for your team, your small team? How do you deal with that? So those are all kind of the interweaving questions that need to be answered. And in those questions, there are some solutions, but therein lies the big problem that school space now. And you got ECF funding helped quite a bit. And there's 3 rounds of that. And you have the ESSER funding, but all of those are winding down. So now you're stuck with state budgets, local levies, local funding, and voters are not very excited about approving those these days for schools. So how do you deal with it? I think some of those things I just talked about are ways to extend the life, but we're going to go there, like it or not, to maintain some of these machines.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's something that I know that we have seen now. Our CTL, like, for example, in our district, they do like a 20% replacement program. Like, I think it just kind of continues on and on. So it's like 20% 1 year, and then the next 20%, and then the next 20%. So, you know, that model has kind of worked in the past. And then now I know that that's going to change. I don't have a lot of know-how as far as how they're managing that now, because obviously with the purchase of so many devices, you know, I know that that's going to be different. But I know what we have done is, first of all, you know, with pandemic, everybody was one-to-one. It's like everybody can take their device home, obviously, during pandemic. When we returned, then there was some changes, because now it's like, okay, we got to think about the future and how we're sustaining, you know, these devices. And then so now slowly it's been kind of, okay, we're going to have a class set And then so there's only certain grade levels that are able to take their Chromebook home. And then usually the elementary levels are kind of, they have a class set where they just plug in into this wall, little case, just so they can be charged and be used there. And in hopes of not having a lot of losses there, you know, being, you know, kind of either if something breaks or something goes wrong. But then at the same time, you know, you also, we are a BYOD district where we do allow students to be able to bring in their device. But then we run into the issues of the student says, well, I don't need the Chromebook. I have my own device. But then when state testing comes, it's like, well, you need the device anyway. So just hold on to it. So there's a lot of factors there and a lot of variables, you know, once we start getting into those details as far as, you know, Chromebooks and obviously having to replace and repair a lot of those Chromebooks too as well because of accidents and, you know, things like that that occur. So now you mentioned the rental model and you mentioned the leasing model. So for our audience members, you know, that that can be, you know, in a position where I'm in or maybe, you know, CTOs or maybe new to being a CTO, can you explain a little bit about the difference? Because maybe this would be something helpful to them to be able to understand and maybe bring up to the other stakeholders and see how they can be able to manage and have, you know, hardware for students and for the learning.
Well, I think we approached, we called it Chrome as a service. I know it is essentially a rental model, but it's a service model. So, I mean, the gives and takes really are that you as the district give us money, we give and manage the devices and give you an uptime. And that means that you're going to refresh more frequently to give your students the latest technology. Your operating costs should be fixed because the way we approached it is like, okay, for $20 a month, I think that was one of the solutions, we de-risk you for everything. The repair, the license, everything comes with it. And your job is just to pay us the $20 a month. We provided some buffer stock. We have a lot of those things built into it. But again, the give and take was you give us the $20 a month and we give you a working device with it with a 99.9% uptime. So it's just like the software as a service model that you that we subscribe, when many of us subscribe to, you know, the give and take is you pay and your machine works, your software works. So we approached it from that point of view. The leasing model is fine because your funding is stable. However, it doesn't cover the operating costs of broken, damaged, et cetera. So you have these unknown variable costs that you can't predict. And as good as vendors are, they can't de-risk you 100% from things, from your students breaking things. But to your original comment on going back in the classroom with no more take-home, we're actually going backwards now. We're going backwards to what all this funding allowed us to do, which every kid had a device, every kid had an access to it all the time. And now we're saying, well, you can't now, it's in the classroom. So we're actually going back on the vision of one-to-one computing a little bit, which is a bit sad, but I understand why schools are doing it because of the funding models. So we're seeing the one-to-one penetration, which I told you is 100%, dropping.
That's great. And, you know, so
I don't know what it is now, in the low 90s. Yeah.
Excellent. Now, I know, and we will be sharing this in the show notes and everything, but I know your website, you have definitely a lot of great resources there. But there is an article there on sustainable funding that is available there for any educators and obviously in anybody in my position as a digital coach, if you can take that and share that with your CTOs or share it there with your district too, that would be great. So can you tell us a little bit about what we're able to find in that article that can be something that's helpful to us as far as our conversation that we're having here as well that can help those decision makers just kind of, you know, at least start thinking about this and maybe saying like, hey, maybe we need to reach out to CTL.
Hmm. Well, I think in that particular article, we proposed several scenarios. One was, of course, our Chrome as a service model, which we think is a sustainable way of managing it. And you know, we haven't really gotten to your discussion at the very beginning, which is what about the technology and the screen size and all the stuff that everybody wants and needs. And then there's some other things that we've been experimenting with, and we have active customers in pilot or actually commercialized. And that is the parent funded model. And that's a little bit BYOD, like you mentioned. However, it's designed to have parents funded if they can. And it's designed to augment the students that don't have parent funding to use school resources to cover the costs there. So it basically is a system where the school picks the device, and they might pick device X because they like it or whatever reason. And we're able to provide that to the school, and parents can transact with our company and buy them. And then when kids that don't have a parent that can buy those for them, we can initiate a coupon code where they could use that, and we would bill the school for the difference. So no one would know that the kid couldn't afford the device. To your other BYOD point, it should be that they all have access to the same devices, because if Sally has a MacBook Pro and Jimmy's using an old piece of crap Windows machine from 10 years ago, that's not equitable. Sally has an advantage. She's going to be perceived differently than Jimmy that's carrying around a 15-pound Windows laptop that's constantly updating all the time. So our system solves the equity issue too, because no matter about their family income, you know, we use the free lunch model to support who gets the coupon. Everybody gets access to the same device. They're on the equal plane. So that is another one. Of course, then there's the public-private partnerships that exist. And there's all kinds of things that are happening around the country there. Each one is, not one of them is the same, but there's a lot of funding that comes from different models. And we just did a project, I think it's in the document, with a city up in Washington, where they were trying to solve digital divide issues. And they put up a private network, which is like your own cellular network, essentially. And they're able to blast the cellular connection to these kids' homes. And CTL builds a special cellular connected device that connects to this network. So the city paid for it and gave it to the school, and 1,200 kids or so have now these devices that they can use in their home that connect free of charge to the private network that the city installed. They also use that same network for emergency services, some other services on there. So it's a very versatile network that they put up, including distributing internet to the kids. So I think we talk about those things. Of course, sustainability and funding. We talk about other big, geopolitical issues like the right to repair and the self-service maintainer, and using student education labs and kids to gain skill sets like learning how to repair, which is a vocational skill. And that's something we encourage, support, and develop programs to, use this group of kids that really are excited about technology. Well, they can repair and swap out a keyboard, and they're learning skills. They're learning how it works and how to work with vendors and all those things. So using something you're already doing as a vocational program is another way we think about business. And that's a trend too, that's out there in the market.
That is amazing. And, for myself, again, just being an end user, and then, of course, being in charge of helping implement and roll out new platforms and so on, and really being hands-on with the technology. I mean, sometimes we don't think about all of this that you're sharing with us. And I think for myself, I have a deeper respect and now more knowledge as far as what goes into, getting devices. And then, of course, like you're mentioning, on your side as CTL and what you're able to offer, I find that something that's very useful, and I'm glad that there are companies that are out there such as yourself that really have that hands-on approach, that customer service, and then also rely on that customer feedback to better your products, which is great. And then, of course, you're also sharing solutions here that might be able to be used by certain districts based on, what you have seen and through your experience. So I really thank you for sharing these resources, because oftentimes there may be, people that are just kind of like, okay, what do I do now? And I'm a member of a message board that's, has a lot of CTOs in it. And you just see continually just like, hey, what's going on here? What's happening here? What are you all doing? What are you doing? And so on. And so they're looking for that knowledge. And obviously there needs to be a knowledge base. So I love that your website does offer that learn section where you do provide just a lot of great articles and blogs that have a lot of great information here. Now, I wanted to kind of touch base a little bit more. Like you mentioned, you did mention internet access and service. So I wanted to ask you too, as far as, you know, moving from LTE to 5G, tell us a little bit about that and how, you know, CTL is on top of that and being able to be a, you know, I guess you would say, I don't know, just part of this change and this technology and making that available and accessible to our students.
Well, first of all, we were the first, well, back in the early days of Chrome in 2011, all Chromebooks had LTE back then, the very first Chromebooks, because Google had a different vision of what the business model for Chromebooks, and they canceled that along the way. So for many years, there was no cell phone connectivity on devices. And 2018, CTL was the first one to do it again. We partnered with Sprint. And so we'd always had a cellular element to CTL. We had done a lot of work with T-Mobile and other carriers in the past. So it wasn't that strange for us. But so we launched it. And that was pre-pandemic. So there are very niche use cases for that. Mobile workforce, you know, a lot of kids that were, you know, distance learning and things like that. And of course, pandemic comes around and then you have to solve not only providing devices, but also in many cases, providing internet in the home to your students. All of them flocked to hotspots. So millions and millions of hotspots were sold. You know, a year later, all those were canceled. But nevertheless, everybody flocked to hotspots. So now they had a device, they had a hotspot, you know, so, and then dad could use the hotspot, you know, it's a very big mess on who was able to use it. So we did quite well during the pandemic, providing those solutions with great partners like Kijiji and Verizon and other carrier partners. But anyway, it became not only a niche thing, but a solution where you could ditch the hotspot and having everything integrated, then, you know, everybody's device looked the same. You didn't have this dongle that you would lose. And then, you know, with 4G, you're getting really, really impressive speeds, which leads us up to the 5G movement. And now we're looking at envisioning where we're trying to get the cost down. And we just showcased, this thing called, you know, 5G RedCap, which is kind of a new technology on 5G that's more affordable. So everybody seems to be really excited about that, but we can get devices, we think, under $300 with a cellular modem inside. So imagine a world where just there is a cellular modem in every Chromebook and pandemic 2.0 or 3.0 comes along and all you have to do is turn on the cellular connection with your carrier and boom, you're in business. You solve all those problems with one shot. So that's what we're building capacity for. We think we have a vision of very, very low cost embedded cellular. And certainly there are big competing, you know, things. Intel thinks they're going to solve the problem with Wi-Fi 6E and Wi-Fi 7 and Wi-Fi 8. And the carriers, of course, which we all use on our phones every day, which solve it from the carrier networks, right? So we're taking both approaches. We have Wi-Fi only, but of course we're heavily invested in the cellular ecosystem. We think that solves a lot of problems long-term for these discussions we're having today.
That is amazing. And like you mentioned, hopefully that never comes as far as like the pandemic 2.0 and so on, but just, you're absolutely right. The number of hotspots and, you know, all of a sudden it's, you're spending this extra money on this piece of hardware and then obviously sometimes getting lost. I know that there was an issue with certain hotspots that were purchased, you know, that I heard from friends nearby where they were just overheating, just very, you know, and they had to bring them back and then be having to, you know, send somebody to go and deliver them and so on. So having this integrated into a device would definitely be something helpful. Also, just the fact too, I think that even for the learning and for our learners, many times I know our school has Wi-Fi and parking lot. And then, of course, you have to drive to the school and park there in the parking lot to be able to get access and so on. But just if it's something that is already enabled and you have it within your device, you have learning that can still take place at home or pretty much anywhere. And I think that's something that is a great solution. You know, in any case, whether pandemic or not, students still have access. And talking about the digital divide and equity, you're absolutely right. You know, and we even see it within our school district, from the north side to the south side school, you know, there's still some difference there and divide, because in some areas you have parents that can and have devices for their kids, so they really don't rely on our school devices. But then on the other end, you really have those students that really need those devices, but they don't have access at home. So it's just one of those things where now students can have that access anywhere at any time and have that equity and be able to learn. And so that's very powerful. So
great. We'll see how it shakes out. I think if the costs get competitive enough on, you know, these new 5G devices, I think it's a realistic solution where they're just with everything. The work that Google's doing on that Google Management Console, obviously we have insight into that, and they're making a lot of investment. We're going to actually give a talk at the COSIN convention, which is the, you know, where all the CIOs get together on what the future holds for what Google's doing, what CTL's doing. So we're pretty bullish on this business model, but let's see. And we've heard some schools that are willing to dump Wi-Fi for students altogether and just go 100% cellular and keep the Wi-Fi networks for teachers and IoT devices and network security and put all the kids on the cellular network.
Oh my gosh, that would be great. Again, just also even with APIs, like getting overloaded. And sometimes we've seen that and we've run into that where some Chromebooks won't connect, or you have to go like step right, put them out right outside the door and then come back in and then they connect.
There's just too many on the channel. Wi-Fi 6E solves that, but cellular is good at putting a lot of people on one network and the range obviously is a lot different. But then you can augment it with private network too and put up your own cellular connection. So anyway, we think the possibilities are pretty huge, and we spend a lot of time thinking about this with great partners like Google, Intel, guys like Rolling Wireless, QuickTel.
That is amazing. That's wonderful. Now, I want to talk a little bit too. I mean, we're talking about what you're able to offer and you're offering school districts and so on. But so I want to ask, you know, is there anything new that you have been working on as far as, you know, new devices or, you know, rolling out? I believe on the website, I had seen something about NL73. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the products that you are offering, and especially this one?
Sure. I mean, that's brand new, so we're starting to ship those now. The key element that here is Intel has a new architecture called Alder Lake, which is the N100 and 200 processor. So that's in there. We're super excited about that. A big performance boost. The other things too, we've done some improvement on the design, higher drop tests, different hinge sets, things like that. But you know, some of the other things too that are coming on this next generation, Wi-Fi 6E, so that relieves some congestion in the networks you're talking about. And then this generation, once we eventually work with Google to onboard the 5G solution, it will support that too later in the year. The other great thing is Google extended the life cycle. So these are supported from an operation standpoint until 2033. So long, long, long life, which, you know, really helps with the sustainability.
Definitely. Well, that's wonderful. And that's so great to hear, you know, what it is that you're doing and the work that you're doing, Eric. This is wonderful. And it's great for me to know a little bit more about CTL. And I'm thankful for my audience too, who's going to be able to listen to this episode and hear more about the work that you're doing, the work that you are, that is coming. And just for everything that you shared today, as a wonderful resource to all my friends that are aspiring CTOs or in the CTO space right now, or like me that are digital coaches, but now have information that we can take to our higher ups to be able to, for consideration and things that are out there and that are new. So I really do appreciate that so much. This has been an amazing, amazing conversation. So thank you so much, Eric, for your time and just sharing. So, but before we end and we wrap up the show, hopefully these are the last three questions that I always love to end the show with. So hopefully you did get to see them in the calendar invite. But as we know, every superhero has a weakness. And we know that Superman's pain point or weakness was kryptonite. So it just kind of weakened him. It was just... So I want to ask you, Eric, since you have, you know, more of an overview as far as what's going on in education and through your perspective, I want to ask you, what would you say would be your current edu kryptonite? What is it in the state of education right now that is like, it just kind of weakens you or gives you that, it's a pain point for you that you're seeing right now?
Well, and sustainable funding is one of the key issues, right? I mean, I think, you know, CTL makes products that we have to, be concerned about what is the pipeline and long-term, view of that look like. And so sustainability is a key problem to solve. I think it, it doesn't debilitate CTL. It challenges us to solve that. So I think it's while it might be some kryptonite, it's definitely a solvable problem. I think when we look at the larger geopolitical issues on like, how are we going to, be more self-sufficient as a nation to build product, to service product, when we're heavily dependent on, these ecosystems that are far away from the United States. And we saw that, CTL did a great job during the pandemic, but look how messed up everything got for suppliers and the ecosystem and the supply chain. So we think a lot about that. I think, working with the Taiwanese vendors to de-risk those things. Also, sustainability is key in building products that, really think about using the right ingredients, make sure your labor sources are clean. We spend a lot of time in that area. It's not a kryptonite for CTL, but again, it's a superpower that we think about a lot. It could be a kryptonite if you're not prepared for these things, but CTL really works hard to make sure we have a business model that is concerned about these inputs. And we think that's going to make us a long-term player in the space.
Excellent. Thank you. I appreciate that. Now, question number two, if you could have a billboard with anything on it, what would it be and why?
For CTL?
It could be anything.
Well, I think really for us, fighting against these global giants, and many of them are Chinese based and things like that, it's like, what's different, trying to scream what's different about how our approach, right? Because we don't have the global reach. And a lot of these IT buyers are just like, rinse and repeat, buy the same thing you got last time and just deal with the pain. Many of them don't even know we exist, even though we try really hard to tell them. So I think, screaming to the world like, hey, we're a different company. This is how we approach it. And, give us a call.
Yeah, I love that. Hey, we're different. Like CTL, we're different. Simple. I can definitely see that. That would work.
We think so.
All right. Last question, Eric, before we wrap up is, do you have a favorite hobby or favorite activity that you wish you could turn into a full-time profession?
Well, I've tried the music thing. I really was trying to study. I wasn't thinking I was going to make any money out of it, but I just wanted to understand how money was made. And that's a tough business. That's tougher than the electronics business. I don't know. I think we're always trying to innovate and turn things into... I think if you really are passionate about the business, money comes. You don't need to worry about that, generally speaking, except for maybe music business. But so I don't know. We're open to all kinds of new business models. Generally, if you do good things happen. So that's the view we take.
Excellent. Perfect. All right, okay. Eric. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. And for all our audience members that are listening or, catching this, on the replay, please make sure that you visit our website at myedtech.life, where you can check out this amazing episode and the other 269 wonderful episodes, where you will be able to listen to educators, creators, founders, practitioners, CEOs, you name it. We have a little bit of it, of everything for you. And I promise you, you will definitely get some knowledge that you can sprinkle onto what you are already doing great. So thank you so much. And if you're not following us on all socials, please make sure you follow us on all socials at MyEdTechLife. I appreciate every single one of you. Eric, thank you so much. And I wish you continued success and CTL continued success in all the things that you are doing. And my friends, until next time, don't forget, stay techie.